And I hear many times I'm teaching about biblical worldview, I'm talking to people, they start critiquing culture, but they get dismotivated. They get frustrated because I know there's no way for us. It's impossible. What can we do? And our conversation is like, be faithful, because we are part of God's history in the world. We are just part, and we're gladly obeying His command in following His steps.
Hi, friends. Welcome to Ideas Have Consequences, the podcast of the Disciple Nations Alliance. Here on this show, we examine how our mission as Christians is to not only spread the gospel around the world to all the nations, but our mission also includes to be the hands and feet of God to transform the nations, to increasingly reflect the truth, goodness, and beauty of God's kingdom. Tragically, the church has largely neglected this second part of her mission, and today, most Christians have little influence on their surrounding cultures. Join us on this podcast as we rediscover what it means for each of us to disciple the nations and to create Christ-honoring cultures that reflect the character of the living God. Welcome again, everybody, to another episode of Ideas Have Consequences. This is the podcast of the Disciple Nations Alliance. I'm Scott Allen, and I am the president of the DNA, and I'm joined today by my team members and friends, Luke Allen, Dwight Vogt, Daryl Miller, and back again with us is our good friend, Pastor George Oliveira. Hi, Pastor. How are you?
Hey, Scott. It's really good to be here again.
Yeah, I have to call you Pastor today because your congratulations on just passing your ordination.
Thank you.
For the Presbyterian Church. I'm not exactly sure of the full title of the denomination there, the group, but congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
George, for those of you who didn't catch our first podcast with George, is the senior pastor of Lakewood Bible Presbyterian Church in Lakewood, Florida. And we know George as a...
Lakeland.
We call a Lakeland, forgive me. Thank Lakeland. You for the correction. I said Lakewood. Lakeland, yes. Okay, you can tell I'm not from Florida. That's right. Anyways, George, we know George from our experience with the DNA. He's what we call a kingdomizer, somebody who has gone through our core training and has been impacted by it, has taught it. Really represents one of many thousands of people now around the world by God's grace who have gone through the training and have been impacted by it. And I think, George, your experience, and this is kind of what we want to get into today a little bit, is a bit unique because we knew you in Brazil. George is a native of Brazil, now living in the United States and pastoring a church in the United States. And so... your experience in that way is unique, George, although I think it's something is increasingly common. I was telling the team before you came on that I read a book several years ago that had a real impact on me. It was called The New Christendom by Jenkins, I believe was his name. But he talked about how Christianity over the last particularly 20 years, 20, 30 years, has been growing very rapidly in places like Brazil and, you know, the global south, we might say, places like Nigeria and China and Iran. And I think for most people in the United States, that's news because we're not really that aware of it. When we look around at the church in the West, in the United States, in Europe, we see a church that has plateaued or in some cases shrinking, or if you're in Europe, shrinking dramatically. And Jenkins, the author of this book, said that the center of Christianity is moving south in terms of sheer numbers, but very soon in terms of also influence and leadership. And I think, George, when I think of you, I think you're just one kind of example, I think, of what we're going to see a lot more of, people coming from the South, global South, to the West, to the North, and leading churches and helping to lead the church. And that's kind of what we wanted to talk to you about today a little bit, just your experience moving across culture, because,
this is
George,
something that I hear a lot, though, from Christians, brothers and sisters here in America. And I tell them where I'm from, what I'm doing here. I'm pastoring a church. Mm. And they look at me, whoa, wow, no, that's nice. We certainly need you. And I get to tell them the blessing that the missionary, the American missionaries were to Brazil and South America. It's like a way of, you know, giving back and honor our brothers that came there. The States has for a long time been the country that sending a lot of missionaries. Brazil is always in that with South Korea, you know, always fighting for the second place, but also Brazil is an ascending nation as well. So we are grateful that the Lord works, you know, He's the Lord of all nations. And we are brothers and sisters here working for His glory. So it's such a privilege to have that, you know, that difference in different nations that are doing the same mission together. So it's really nice.
By the way, Dad, the book you're referring to, I believe, is The Next Christendom, and that's by Philip Jenkins. Robert Fowler.
Okay, The Next Christendom, Yeah, I recommend everyone read that book because it gives you a perspective on the church and the world. And he's a sociologist, so he's done a lot of research, and it's not in the news at all. You know, and he says, in terms of social movements, it's probably one of the most dramatic social movements of the 21st century that nobody knows about just because it's not being covered in the news. The fact that you have more Anglicans in Nigeria than in all of England combined, you know, maybe 10 times over, you know, and that's just one country in Africa. You know, it's just an example of this. And anyways, George, I think of Darrow's, when I went through my experience with this training many years ago, you know, Darrow had such an influence on me too. And one of the things that he said that stuck with me is if you want to be a cross-cultural missionary, you have to understand three worldviews. You have to understand the worldview from the culture that you grew up in. What is that dominant worldview? It's shaped you way more than you realize. What's the worldview of the culture that you're going to? You know, what is that dominant worldview? And then thirdly, what's the worldview of the Bible? The Bible has a worldview, right? It has a view of reality, of what it means to be human, of good and evil and everything else. So you have to understand three worldviews. And I think the hardest one to understand is your own, because we are in bubbles, right? I mean, we just are raised in it. We swim in it, you know, all day long, all day. We don't have perspective on it until we move outside. And then that's the blessing. It was when you cross a culture, then you all of a sudden you get a perspective on it. And wanted to hear, and you get a perspective as well on the culture that you're coming to, right? Because you're coming in as an outsider. So you see things that people that are there don't see. So with that all said, George, what did you learn, just as somebody who's moved cross-culturally, what did you learn about your own culture that you didn't see before coming to the United States? How did you learn about the dominant worldview in Brazil? And then as a follow-up, what did you learn about the United States? Love to hear your thoughts on this.
Before you answer that, I want to make an observation, Scott. Yeah. When you said three worldviews, your own cultures, which is hard for us to see because it's the fishbowl that we grew up in, the other culture that we're going to, and that becomes that's easier for us to see because it's different than our own culture. And then you said the biblical worldview, but you said it as if it's one of many. Mm. No, the biblical worldview is the objective worldview. Yes. My culturalist view is not the objective one, and neither is the culture's view that we're going to.
That's right.
And I just want to be careful that we don't link. There's many worldviews, and pick which one you want. No, there's only one reality, and we need to realize that that reality is described by what God has made, and it's also been described in the scriptures.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And they comport with one another.
Absolutely, Darrow. Good clarification. And the biblical worldview is the one that challenges both of these worldviews, the worldview
of
the world we come from and the worldview that we're going to.
That's
right. So, and this is where a lot of missionaries in the past have made mistakes. They think, hey, I need to get whatever the culture I'm being a missionary in to be more like my home culture. No, the goal is not to get that culture to be more like your home culture. It's to have both cultures be more like the true biblical worldview. George, talk to us here. Yeah,
Darryl, I was going to say that if you didn't say it, so don't worry.
Thank you, George.
It's interesting that because when you say like that, it's impossible not to compare. It's just impossible. Mm. But the first time I had that perception was not in the States, actually. It was when like I was maybe 20-something year old, and we received a couple from Canada. It's Lisa and Nelson. And Lisa would challenge us a lot by defining my own culture, because she was an outside of the culture, and she was telling, you know that Brazilians do this and this and this. Like, whoa, I didn't notice that. Oh, that's true. Mm-hmm. And I start to reflect more on that. So it's also beneficial for the people in the country to have someone from outside. And whoa, I didn't notice that. I didn't see that. It emphasizes things that, as we learn, you know, in the Corindale course about the way the ideas spread, you know, some things that, you know, that's like that because that's the way I learned, or that's, and we start to, you know, think more about those things. And the main difference in terms of religion that I see Brazil and the States is like, there is, especially what I hear from Americans here in the South, is that assumption that every American's a Christian, right? So this idea of, because you're American, you're Christian. And in Brazil, it's the inheritance of Roman Catholicism. So you're a Catholic because you were born here. And that's what my mom used to say before she was a Christian. She would say, oh, I was a Roman Catholic. Do you go to Mass or did you? No, I just was, because that was the reality. And when you study, when you go back to the history of Brazil and you see the inheritance that we have, you kind of understand more and more why the things that we are the way we are. You know, when the Portuguese came in the 1500s, they would bring that European mentality of, you know, we're going to work here, we're going to do this. And they would bring the Jesuits and the priests to catechize people. But the Indians, the Amerindians, right, the Indians that back then, they didn't want to do those things, like work in the agriculture or something for them. They could not have them do that. So they had to import more black slave from Africa. Mm. Can you see the mix there? It's like the Catholicism from Europe in the 1500s is right when we have the Reformation, the Protestant Reformation. So it was after the Counter-Reformation that they intentionally start sending the Jesuits into the New World, and that's Brazil. And this is the worldview they have. They have this worldview of time, the worldview of goal, of achieving their goals. And the Africans, though, they were, you know, animistic. So they were worshiping energies. They were worshiping their gods. And most of them, in that time, they would change the name of their gods, of the spirits, to the Roman Catholic saints, so they wouldn't be persecuted. So you can see more mixture in the religion. And then you have the Indians with the Tupan, who is God. It's just one God, but this God is over nature and controls everything in nature. And the more they grow, the more they mixture in these ideas of the Roman Catholicism with the animistic worldview, with the spiritual worldview of the Indians. It's a mixture that it kind of results in a freedom of religion, or in a way of just being, you know, you live the way you want. We have many religions here in the country. Brazil's like that. This spirituality, but they impact even today, because the way, for example, the African religions of the experience, the way that the Indians and the Africans would see time, they would focus on the past a lot, and they would celebrate and they would focus in experience. But the Europeans, they were more focused in goals, in what they do. So you see that they're always clashing and fighting. But after like more years, the development of religion, we had what is called Umbanda. In Portuguese, some people say that it comes from the Portuguese word uma banda, one band, one thing together. This religion, it's like, comes from Candomblé. It's a monotheistic religion that God exists, but God is just way out there. So in order to get to God, you need what they call orishas. It's like a spiritual entity that will make the way to God. And you need certain emissaries or ambassadors, they call Preto Velhos, Caboclos, people that the spirits of the Indians or the Africans from the past. And by how do they do their liturgy? They do by music, drums. They do by dancing, by rituals. And they don't care so much about time. It's like as long as you are really spiritual, as long as you have this transcendent experience. And when I first saw that, I remember that I grew up in the Pentecostal movement in Brazil.
And just on that, how old is that movement in Brazil? It's not very old, is it?
No, it's after the Azusa revivals.
So early 1900s.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah.
So on top of everything else that you've explained, you've got that now as a new layer, right?
But yeah, but you can see some of the nuances of our history in that movement. You see a lot of instruments, drums, the rhythms. If I'm talking specifically about music, you see minor chords and major chords bringing attention, and the rhythm, it would bring them an experience, and what many would be naming that as being filled with the spirit, and they start spinning in the spirit in a very similar way that this would happen in the mixture of religions there. So it's part of, I'm not saying that it's all of that, but you have this glossolalia, you have this preaching with low theology and great on relational and connections, and people would be transcendent. And how did we get here? When I come to the States, I see in Brazil, growing up, having like 3-hour services, just fine. Can you imagine that happening in America? Like, if the pastor preaches for 35 minutes, oh, hey, that's too much. 30 minutes, 25, 20, you know? And I see that, you know, different perspective of we got to keep going. We got to keep doing the next thing. We're always busy. Yes, we're going to go to church on Easter or Christmas, but you better not have a service that is more than an hour and 50 minutes, because I'll leave. It's noon, I'll leave the church. I don't care who's preaching, you know? It's kind of that perspective. But in Brazil, like, you kind of, if the preacher is filled with the spirit or is going in excitement or oh, that's a great experience, so we got to stay as long as we can to enjoy that. Mm-hmm. So you start to notice that also in the relationships, you know, meetings in Brazil, like meetings to decide things is different than meetings in America. And meetings for hospitality, you receive people at your home, like, okay, birthday parties here. Actually, they like starts 2 and finishes at 4, and at 4 everybody leaves. Like it's amazing how
were
that.
Were you surprised, yes, by that? Was that something that you didn't expect when you came
to
the United States?
No, in Brazil, linger until you can't stand. You're really tired. It's like no, don't go. You know, but yeah, it's funny that you have these perspectives. I'm not saying that one is bad and the other is good. In essence, but what is the challenge here of having a spiritual account encounter with God in liturgy, because biblically we have the God's commands when we gather as the His people to sing, you know, spiritual songs, to pray, to preach the word. But the way that we do that, it's not necessary we have to do like the Israelites did, or we have to do like the Africans do, like the Chinese do, like America do. We all express parts of our culture and parts of our history in what we in our liturgy of services, right? Some churches, of course, they don't have that space to do that because of persecution. But I think that's a different situation there. But when we we're talking about different churches doing that, how is the American liturgy or expression of worship aligned to the scriptures, and how do we receive more from others, from other cultures that are not that can benefit us relationally and to God and to ourselves?
If you'd like to explore what a biblical worldview is and how you can begin the journey of transforming your mind to start seeing everything through biblical perspectives, we would encourage you to check out our free biblical worldview training course, the Kingdomizer Training Program, which is available at corumdale.com and is also linked in the episode landing page. The Kingdomizer Training Program was created to help Christians live out their call to make disciples of all nations, starting with themselves and working out from there. I would recommend this course to any Christian who wants to stop living in a sacred secular divide that limits their faith to only some areas of life. But instead, it will help them to start to see everything Coram Deo, which means before the face of God, and to start connecting their passions and their calling to their faith. Begin to have an impact with Christ in your culture, that if it's anything like mine, is in desperate need for truth and purpose right now. Again, this course is completely free and available at corumdale.com.
I think your example of time is a good example, George. So you noticed that when you came to the United States in particular, that the United States has a high value on time, promptness. You know, we want our church services to be really tight, and everything is kind of planned around that. Even birthday parties or any kind of social gathering tends to be, you know, pretty tight and scripted. And of course, I've noticed the same thing when we have people from other countries come over to our house for a dinner. They'll very often, you know, just stay. And even Kim and I, being Americans, right, we'll kind of start, we've got other things we want to kind of move on to, you know. But so, but what I think that that should prompt us to do when you notice those differences is then to say, okay, here's my culture, and we have a particular view of time and many other things. And here's another culture. They have a different view of time. But to come back to the true, right, to the biblical, and ask questions like, how does the Bible shape my understanding of this, right? You know, and it's good because maybe it's the first time you ever ask a question like that. You just don't even think about it. But the Bible has something to say about these kinds of things, right? And it's going to probably challenge, I think in this instance, it's going to challenge both cultures, right? There is a future, and time is precious, and it's a gift. We have to steward it. So that would kind of lean more towards the American kind of view, I suppose. But on the other side, people are very precious, and relationships are very important. And we need to prioritize those. We need to value people. And part of the way you do that is by showing hospitality and things like that. So that's going to challenge, right? You know,
if we look at it as a bad thing, that the American way of seeing time, let's say, if we look at it as a bad thing, is that there is a tendency of being individualistic and focus only on your schedule, and that's what matters the most because you're working for yourself, you're building yourself, you are your own God. That's the secular mindset in the West, right, per se. But on the other hand, if we look at when we look at Jesus, you know, the busiest days that he had, next day he would be up before the sun to have prayer time with the Father, to have, you know, and he was fully anywhere he was fully there. You know, yeah. It seems that nothing would stop him from doing what he had to do. And there were some times that he would just sit and multiply bread and eat with them. Mm. But there are the times that he said, it's time for us to leave. It's time to go. Mm. But there are hungry people here, Jesus. Yes, but we got to move on. So how do we balance that reality? And I think it should give us this idea what you're saying about relationship, because people matter. Mm-hmm. And the great, I think the from my experience here in the States, the greatest challenge for us is to connect with people. Sometimes we don't know how to connect because everyone is busy. If you say, how are you doing? Oh, I'm great, but you know, busy, just busy. Mm. This is the language that comes out of our mouths every time. Even in church, I'm talking to parents, moms. Yeah, but how are you? Yeah, I'm good. You know, just busy. Life, you know, life, that's the way it is. But is that the way it's supposed to be? Is that how the Christian are supposed to trust in the Lord with their time and you know, honor him with their time, and also honor him in true relationships? Because when we have this, everybody's busy and running, there's a lot of connections that are lost. And
yes, that's right.
I see a lot of, there's a pastor here from Orlando. His name is Jim Davis. He wrote a book called The Great De-Churching. And he's part of it's called TGC, the Gospel Coalition. He wrote that book, and he was studying, you know, data, why people leave the church, what's going on with this generation, Gen Z, millennials, and so on and so forth. It's culturally normal for Americans to move to college, right? So they go to a different city. And for us in Brazil, that's not what happens. People leave their home usually when they're married. The thing is, when people would go to the next city, they would not find a church to be their home church, you know. And then also with the mentality of the worldview, the secular worldview in colleges and so on, they don't have connections and relationships. And most of churches, historically, they are around programs. It's like 60 to 80% of the reaching American churches is like, come to our church. When you come to our church, we will evangelize you. And this is not what the Lord told us to do. So the Lord told us to go. It's being in their world, right? It's being in this, being vulnerable out there, because it's so easy for us to be in our own walls of our church when we control everything, you know, the environment. But when we're there, I think that's the challenge. You know, I heard Leslie Newbegin and Keller talking about a missionary encounter for the West, about that. It's like, how do we reach the culture? How do we go there? Because even though America is not like Europe in terms of losing the Christian's roots, right? But it is decreasing rapidly as well. So how do we have the gospel framing the missions of the churches so we can go outside our four walls of our churches and live missionally? That is the tension that I think DNA has been dealing for 20-something years. And that is the church's missions, I think, for the West. How do we critique the culture, and how do we challenge the culture with the biblical worldview? It feels that sometimes we're afraid, right? We have to be apologetics, or we have to have all the answers. But if we ask questions to the culture, it will show. Daryl was talking about reality, like it doesn't match, you know, the worldview of today's world with the reality of the scriptures, with the reality of the world.
Yeah, I think those are all really great insights, George. I do think culture is something that we take way too we take way too lightly. It shapes us way more profoundly than we realize. We're all enculturated way more deeply than we realize. Even as Christians who've been Christians for decades, and to have opportunities to step outside, to look at your culture critically, and to begin to ask questions: Is it more biblical, or is it more American or Brazilian? Mm-hmm. You know, the way that I am, the way that I'm thinking, whatever the issue happens to be, is really, really important for all of us in our growth as Christians. We just can't grow if we're not asking those kind of questions and getting some perspective on our cultures.
And who is discipling the culture, right?
Who's exerting the dominant influence? You need to know that, right?
You think
not
about
just
the
historically,
the,
but presently.
The right? Young people here, it's not only here, of course, most of the world, but the Gen Z, the average is 6 hours a day on social media. And in the past, I grew up with the TV shows, the famous people, like from sports, from this and that. They were in the gates of the city. But, you know, many influencers now, they have like 5 million, 10 million followers. And some of them, we don't even know who they are, because it's so spread now. And are we thinking about that? Because we spend 2 hours or 1.5 hours on Sunday, and then they spend the rest of their week being discipled from those things. How do we see the connection there, or how do we communicate in a way that will challenge that view? I think it's a good question also to ask to this generation, right?
To say the least. I mean, we're in the midst of what some people call, I think it's the third industrial revolution, the information revolution. We're in the midst of this revolution of the internet and of cell phones and technology, and now it's just accelerating with AI. And it's happened in the last, you know, I mean, in my lifetime, in my adult lifetime, this has all happened. And it's as profound and powerful of a change as any that has ever happened in human history, probably more so. And we're right in the middle of it. And if you're not thinking critically about it, if you're not, you know, thinking, how is it shaping me and the way that I think, you need to start, you know, that's so important right now. So, Dwight, you had a really great question that you raised before we got on with George, and I thought that would be kind of a nice, I don't know if this is the, if you want to go there now, but I thought that would be a great way to kind of
go backwards
talk about this as well. So,
I want to go backwards before I ask that. George, you're making me, I'm going way back to the Africans that played the drums in Brazil before the Portuguese came. And the focus there was on catching the spirit of the gods and somehow making that your internal experience. And I'm thinking, and that goes into Pentecostalism and drums and then I'm thinking, well, was that just syncretized or was that redeemed? Maybe they redeemed those drums, you know, and it actually became a pathway for the spirit of God then to, you know, because he uses music and he uses percussion and drums. And I'm thinking, wow. So anyway, you didn't answer that question. I don't expect you to. But then I'm going, okay, and then Daryl, you're talking, we have my culture, we have George's culture, and we have kingdom culture. And I'm going, but we also want Brazilian culture, and we want American culture, we want pizza, and we want tacos or whatever. And yes. You know, and yet there's a kingdom culture, and a kingdom culture is rooted in worldview, because worldview is at the root of culture. I'm going, okay, so what would a kingdom culture look like and still be Brazilian? What would a kingdom culture look like and still be American? And then my next question is, how do we need to be countercultural? Because you guys are talking about millennials, you're talking about Zs, you're talking about a programmed church where you only have an hour on Sunday and you have to get out of there on time. And I'm going, yeah, that's our church, and we're upset if it's 5 minutes late because something happened. And I go, how do we need to be countercultural so that we can somehow move out of the confines of our own culture where there you know, anyway, you guys are answering zero questions for me today. You're just raising them.
That's good.
But thanks for raising them, and so we'll see.
Well, I think I think we should talk a little bit about that, Dwight. I think it's a really important question that you're raising, and that is, as the gospel, the culture of the kingdom of God comes into another culture, does it obliterate that culture? You know, does it tear it all the way down to the ground and then something completely new is built? I think the answer to that is no. I think there's a redeeming of cultural elements. Certainly some things have to go. I think of a widow burning in India, for example. That can't stay, right? You know, but there's other things that do. And I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this. I'll just share one thought, and that is that and this had a big influence on me when I first realized that, is that when God came to this earth, the incarnation of Jesus, he came into a culture. It was the Jewish culture. It's a very distinct culture. And Jesus operated within that culture. And certainly he challenged it, and he did redeem it. But he brought redemptive elements to it as well, but he didn't obliterate it. And I think that's so important, because I was a missionary in Japan for several years, and one of the things I noticed in Japan is that the gospel had come to Japan largely after World War II, and many American missionaries came. I mean, there's a long history. The Jesuits brought Christianity to Japan back in the 1700s. But it had never become an indigenous faith, if you will. And Christianity always should. It should become something that isn't seen as a foreign faith, but it's our faith, because it's true. It's true not just for Americans or Jews. It's true for people all over the world in every culture. And it needs to, at some point, become our faith in a uniquely Japanese way, or an American way, or Brazilian way. Dara, what are your thoughts on this?
I have a number, and I think the word redeeming culture is the right one. So much of what we do is critique culture, and we've talked about this morning. But we are to be beyond critiquing culture and absorbing culture, which is what we do just through growing up. We are to create culture. Mm. And it needs to be uniquely the culture of the kingdom. Mm-hmm. But we have this image from Scripture that I think helps us understand this. And that is, there's one God. It's unity and diversity. One God, three persons. One king. One kingdom. But you have people from all over the earth that become part and contribute to that kingdom. So it's not either my home culture or their home culture. It's the culture of the kingdom. Mm-hmm. We started out by talking about the necessity, or at least I was thinking about this. We are to disciple nations, not just win people to Christ and get them to church. Mm-hmm. We're discipled at the level of culture. That's part of this process. How do we do it? But it's not saying no to everything in another culture, because in every culture, there are things that are beautiful and redeemable. Mm-hmm. And in every culture, there are things that need to be rooted out because they are bringing death and destruction. So we need to, as Christians in a redeeming culture and discipling at the level of culture, distinguish between those good things in every culture that are there, mm-hmm. shine a light on them, mm-hmm. and those things in which they're destructive, those things need to be honestly dealt with. Mm-hmm. So I think this is part of the pattern that we need in going forward. Now, I had an experience when I was in New Zealand teaching at a leadership training school for YWAM. And we got on this issue of culture, and we ended up spending a whole day on processing what I call the ABCs of culture. What are some of the bad things in your culture? Where did they come from? And what are the consequences? And each group from Germany, from the islands, from the Americas that was there, looked at their own culture through that lens of the ABCs of culture. And there was a time at the end of the day where I said, now I want you to come up and share. And what they ended up doing, they had a big cross, a wooden cross in this room. And each group came up and had on a piece of paper some of the bad things in their culture that they nailed to the cross. And each group that came up shared what those things were that were detrimental to their culture. And I can tell you there was weeping and gnashing of teeth. Mm. People could see how their culture was being limited by these things. And so they nailed them to the cross. And then we had a time of prayer, thanking God that not for the cross, but also for the redemption of culture that the cross provides. And they nailed these things to the cross. And then I said to them, okay, now I want you to, between now and tomorrow, as a nation, as a culture, what is something that you could redeem mm-hmm. that has redeemable value? Mm. And I remember some of the guys from the South Pacific, these big Maori chest-thumping warriors. And of course, they related to something you said earlier, George. Their culture was expressed through their music, through their dance. And they realized that and how their dance had demonic elements in it. And that was part of what was keeping them down. And so that night they got together and created a new story and a new dance. And the next day they got up and they danced, as Maoris do, this new story.
And it's interesting because I was reading a book called Destroyer of Gods by Larry Hurtado, and he talks about how the early church was countercultural in their time, because you could not invite people to church, because they would tell the soldiers and you would die. So how would the gospel be spread in that culture? It had to be through the church out there, right? And I think that this is the challenge that we see. But they had some characteristics that is so interesting. They were integrated people from different ethnical groups. It's like the Greeks and the Jews, they were together worshiping Jesus. And also, Jesus is Lord. You know, it was the first persecution they had. It was not a religious one. It was a political one. Because by saying Jesus is Lord, you're saying that Caesar is not. So how dare you say that? So you might die. So they were that courage and that boldness to live in a society and challenge the culture is something that it's great. Also, what we see, I remember Darryl speaking about that in the one of the courses, talking about the Roman soldiers not seeing compassion as a quality or as a good thing. And they would care for the sick. They would care for the poor. And they would die for that. They would also be non-retaliatory. They would forgive. They would, all the shame, all, you know, the scoffing, and people would shame them and put them in a different level and say all the things. He would just forgive them. But they also were, the expression I think is they put their money where their mouth were, right? Because they would also care for the babies, and they were against infanticide. We would call them the pro-life, right, movement. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also they were, the last one is that they were they had a counterculture in terms of sex, a new sex culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people would force
monogamy, right?
Monogamy, and also people from higher levels of society would have sex whoever they wanted in the lower one, and they would stop that from going. Mm. But if you notice, mm-hmm. something, so the first two that I said about multi-ethnics and care for the poor usually is related to the left. And the last two ones, the moral, prudent, and sexual, and pro-life, is more tending to the right side of political conversations. So the gospel challenges everybody. The gospel and the biblical worldview challenges wherever your political view is. So it's not about one or the other. How do we challenge that? We have one group saying that the others don't understand the Bible and this and that, but the first early church were living and changing culture with the power of the gospel, with the power of the Spirit, right? The Spirit was working then. And the last thing I wanted to mention about Darrell's comment is that how do we live a life of obedience, not expecting to see the whole country transformed? Because I think he said that we usually have the critiquing view of culture and then absorbing view of culture, but we are to have this idea of creating culture. And I hear many times I'm teaching about biblical worldview, I'm talking to people, they start critiquing culture, but they get dismotivated. They get frustrated because I know there's no way for us. It's impossible. What can we do?
Yeah.
And our conversation is like, be faithful, obey. What do you have in your hands? Give to the Lord, because we are part of God's history in the world. We are just part, and we're gladly obeying His command in following His steps. So it's not about, oh, Scott changed America, Dwight changed the North. It's not about that. It's about God's glory in His story, and we're part of that, and we're being used by God in that. So in Phoenix, in Lakeland, in Brazil, wherever we are faithful, and God will use that for His glory.
Yeah, great word there, George. I think that's so important for us, God is, this is really His mission. I mean, that always is something that comes back to me. This mission of discipling nations is something that He is passionate about, and in the same way that He wants to see our own lives at the individual level redeemed and sanctified and made more Christ-like, He wants to see our nations made more like His kingdom, and He gives us a role to play in that. Praise God for that. How it gives our life meaning and purpose. But we're not the ones. I'm not going to change my culture or any culture. I'm just going to be faithful, as you said, George. I'm just underscoring what you said, And by the way, that faithfulness, God can use it in a significant way. I don't want to undermine.
Exactly.
I often think of people like the great missionary to Ireland, right, that we celebrate, Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
He saw that culture, which had beautiful elements to it, but boy, it was rough and violent, tribal and pagan.
Mm-hmm.
He saw that change in his lifetime dramatically. So I don't want to underscore the fact that things can't change and they can't change quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, that's not your job. Your job is to be faithful and see what God does and give
you glory. I just remembered a story, Scott, about in 2016, we were having a week gathering, young people with Daryl there talking, kind of a Labrie style that would do like conversations all day long. It's so rich. Mm-hmm. And it was a time, I think it was a few years later, that we had translated the book Nurturing the Nations. And the translation in Portuguese, it came, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. It's a very impacting title. So I was telling Daryl about giving that book to a friend of ours, and Rebecca was reading with her, and the impact the book made to this to our friend, and also to her marriage, and also to the way that she was teaching her kids, the way that she would see her mission as a woman. And it was beautiful to see that. But in that year, we were there in Brasilia, in the capital of Brazil. And we had a few copies of the book. And then I think it was Nelson or Pastor Nelson or someone else that gave that same book to the Ministry of Women in Brazil, in the government.
Yes.
And she read the book, and she was thanking Vero. And she said, we're going to try to have the public rules or the public now, the way that we do policy here, the way that we do things here, the run things here based upon the view of woman like that, a biblical view of woman. So yes, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, you know.
No, but that's a good example. I mean, Darrow didn't set out to say change public policy in Brazil around issues of women and family, but God did have, he had a purpose and an agenda and a meeting that he wanted to happen, and he used Darrow in that. That's a really good example of that, George. You know, you never know. And you should never be faithless. You know, there's nothing I can do. Things are so bad, whatever it is. I think right now that's a real common, you know, idea, especially in the American church, because we're living at a time when the culture is changing rapidly and in not a positive way. So it's easy to kind of just say, oh, there's nothing. We kind of give up. But never, that should never be what we do. We should. I like this idea of creating culture a lot. Yeah, critiquing culture, just simply absorbing culture. But how do we create? What can I do to create a kingdom culture? And by the way, you can do that as an American or a Brazilian. It's going to look different, but the principles of the kingdom are what's going to come through. And that diversity, that the unity is the principles of the kingdom. The diversity is the fact that we're expressing it as unique people from different places. And there's something really beautiful about that. There's something very powerful, and we can learn from each other. You know, maybe at that point, I'd love to hear, just as we wrap up today, George, if you could bring something to American evangelicalism or American church from your vantage point as a Brazilian, what would it be? How could we create that kingdom culture here in the United States? What is wisdom or insight can you bring us as a Brazilian? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I want to say that.
A Brazilian Christian.
Yes, I want to say that as loving as I can. I don't want to be rude or anything, but I think that from my experience and the way that I see most churches doing things, I think we should think less about programs and less about the need to show people how great we are or how much people we have in our church, and more about, do I know the names of my neighbor next door? Do I know where they're from? How long they're living here? Have I invited them to sit here? Oh, what if it? And some, I hear that. What if someone that doesn't believe in God, or what if it's a transgender person, or what if it's a homosexual? Oh my gosh, what I'm gonna do? I don't know how to talk. Let's have relationship. Let's know the person. You receive in your homes and. Make that our mission, relationships, intentionality in our workplace, working for the glory of God, intentionality in our families, intentionality in relationships. How do I sit with someone that thinks differently than me and starts from the Bible and the biblical worldview and challenge the culture? We're not, you know, God... Romans 8 says, if God is for us, who can be against us? So we're called to be out there. And the more we have that discipleship focus, so we have the proclamation of the gospel, we have a way of living, a missional lifestyle, I think that we start to lose some of the pragmatic idea of, I have to do a great Easter Sunday so we can have more people here, or a great Christmas service. Or, you know, let's get out of the fortress of the walls, right?
I think what I hear you saying, George, is just we have an institutional kind of mindset when it comes to church in the United States. And it's about the church, the program, the building, mm-hmm. the service, the music. But you're saying be more of a people of God, you know, and get outside of that kind of institutional mindset and just ask yourself, you know, what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus every day in my context as a neighbor and as a work, as a person in the workplace, and living faithfully in that way. That's a really, I think, very quite powerful thing. Dwight and Luke, any comments from you as we wrap up today or questions?
Yeah, I appreciate you being very practical, George. I was just sitting here thinking, wow, do I know my neighbors, where they came from, how long they've lived here? I sort of do, but not really, not all of them, not well. That's just that's a very important starting point, so thank you.
George, I just want to underscore too, Luke, I know you want to say something here, but just what if your neighbors are transgender or LGBTQ? Mm-hmm. I think this is something that gets a lot of, our culture doesn't like this idea at all, this idea that we have to love the sinner and hate the sin, and yet that's a very biblical idea that we can't abandon, that listen, no, God doesn't endorse what they believe or what they're living and how they're living. It's destroying them, you know. At the same time, he loves them, right? He died for them, and he's probably already at work in their lives trying to lead them to himself, and he's always out there ahead of us, you know, very often. And he could use us. So, but we have to be careful. How do we see them? Do we see them in the way that God does, as people that he loves and he died for, you know, and not just, oh, these are bad people because they're Democrats or whatever they are, Republicans or whatever it is.
And that also shows the wrong view of the gospel, because sometimes we're doing the prayer like, I thank you, Lord, because I'm not like this person. Mm-hmm. And without being reminded that we are the sinners, that God saves. Right. That's my testimony. So, yes, I was not a drug dealer. But you know what? You know what? The gospel saved me. I was a sinner, and Christ died for me. So there's no greater present than that. So if I look at someone with that mentality, no, I have to look at everyone with the eyes of Christ. Because if Christ did not speak with sinners, he would not have incarnated, because everyone he was speaking was, they were sinners, right? So
no,
it's the power of the gospel.
Go ahead, Luke. You've got something I think you want to say.
Oh, man, I have so many thoughts. I'm like, Dwight, this is raising more questions than I can keep up with. A couple of themes I've been picking up on today when we're talking about culture, or George, when you were talking about how Gen Z spends so much time online these days and how we have influencers for every possible small niche interest of society, and you can isolate into your, you know, I like fly fishing, so I pay attention to these guys, or I, you know, politically always stay in this bubble, or I'm into
bird,
you know,
washing. I've never seen that before, but I heard about that bird washing. There's something.
Well, bird watching. Hey, yeah, that's huge.
I didn't know that.
That's like a full on religion. Yeah, that's right.
You're not into that, George. We're all into bird watching. No, but with the online age, it can create even more of a separation, you know, and we're all in our own little worlds. And I think a lot of times with that, we lose our common humanity, and it can often lead to pride. You know, my group's better than your group. I don't want to talk to your group. I have no idea how I would even talk to your group, because I've never even met someone like you or sat down and had an honest conversation. And if we did, I'm sure you would just have a lot of things wrong with you, and I wouldn't even know what to say.
I even make jokes. I make jokes with the Floridian here, ways they don't know how to talk to a person from California. So it's like, I always make joke with them. It's like,
no, yeah, it's true. but I think sometimes as Christians, we can often just, maybe this is an American thing, but we think becoming a better Christian or going deeper in our faith means studying the next detailed, difficult argument of theology, which I'm totally for. I'm not against that. But it's like, we need to work on the fundamentals, you know? We got to go back to the basics, and that's what you were saying, George. We need to just realize that we are all created in the image of God. We are all sinners. These basic things. I'm no better than you. You know, God saved me, not by anything that I did. And seeing other people in that light, that's the basics. But we need to go back to the basics, and that will transcend the separations that we see, and that will transcend cultural separations and, you know, geographic separations of Brazil and the U.S. And so
you,
on.
You
so
can go
California.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. Yeah. Wow. You can go on, right? Yeah. Because there's a lot of tension, you know, after George Floyd, the racism and Black Lives Matter and so on and so forth. But also there's like what I'm noticing as I live here and talk to people is like there's a subworld of the Latinas, the Puerto Ricans in Florida, the Mexicans. It's kind of a they live in a different world in America, and it's like and they don't talk to you or they don't care about speaking English sometimes, and they don't feel in or. And then after that, there's Brazilian. So it's a lot of boxes for us. So what does it mean for us as Native Americans to have relationship with a Latino, an intentional relationship with an Asian, and see that and learn from the differences, the cultural differences, because see that we're all in that together for the glory of God. I'm talking about church members, yes, relationship, and also to the world. Sometimes I feel, this is the American church, and then we have the Brazilian church there. It's just the immigrant church, you know, just, yeah, but the real one's right here. So how do we navigate in these cultural tensions with the gospel? And when we have, and I enjoy a lot to be a pastor in an American church because I get that a lot. Like, you, a Brazilian, a Latino, being oppressed of Americans? And they start asking about the ethnicity of the members of the church, or they start to ask, I was like, oh, but you have a lot of Brazilians there, right? No, I just, no, one couple only. But it's like, oh, so how did you do that? It's so, it's like, no, the Lord called me here to serve. And I think it's beneficial for us to learn how to navigate in that. And how do I learn to communicate the gospel that the people sitting in the pew will understand? Not with only the Greek and the exegesis neat or okay. We are to have that, but how do we communicate it to the culture? And because we know the power that the gospel has to transform our lives. So,
listen, that's probably a great place to wrap up, George. Thank you for that reminder that we need to be looking for ways to cross those cultural boundaries and share our common humanity and the love of Jesus, often with people that, because we are increasingly into our own little communities and boxes, and but as followers of Jesus, we need to cross those boundaries, so thanks for your reminder on that today, George, and for your example of doing that. And Dwight and Luke, thank you, and Darrow as well, for being a part of this great discussion. And for all of our listeners today, I just want to thank you again for making our podcast something that's a part of your life. Thank you again for listening to another episode of Ideas Have Consequences, the podcast of the Disciple Nation.
Hi, friends. Thanks again for joining us for this episode with Pastor George Oliveira. If you'd like to continue to learn about worldviews, and particularly your own worldview, and how you receive that throughout your life, your experiences, or from your culture, then I have a couple of really helpful tools that can help you in this process of learning. The first one of these resources is short, easy, and concise, and I would recommend going and checking that out right away. And then the other two are going to be a little bit more time-consuming. So if you'd like to go check out that first resource, just head over to YouTube right now and search Why Does Your Worldview Matter? Again, that is Why Does Your Worldview Matter? And right away, you'll see one of our short explainer videos that is just over 4 minutes long. This video does a great job of encapsulating what is worldview, why does it matter, and which worldview is the one that actually works in the world. After that, if you'd like to continue your learning process and go a little bit deeper, then I would recommend checking out the Kingdomizer training program, which I mentioned during the break today. And that free video training course is actually based off of a book, so if you're more of a reader than a watcher, then I would recommend going and checking out the book Discipling Nations by Darrow Miller, which is really the book that launched this ministry, the Disciple Nations Alliance. So again, I would recommend all of those resources, but to start, head over to YouTube and watch Why Does Your Worldview Matter? All of those resources also are linked in the episode page, which you can find linked in the show notes below. The Ideas Have Consequences podcast is brought to you by the Disciple Nations Alliance. To learn more about our ministry, you can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, or on our website, which again is disciplenations.org. Thanks again for joining us today, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.